So we're going to talk about that later.
Yeah.
I got things to say. Once you're past that, let's talk about foie gras. I don't care where you come down on one side or the other on foie gras, but that is a program for another day. Penguins don't like the smell of spearmint. He's like, we must have cured cancer, is his answer.
Okay, I've got David Moore, one half of the Barter Bros, the Exchange Brothers, is here today with Jose Cienfuegos. And Jose, we met first time at the Evening of Excellence, the CAB Evening of Excellence, which is, for those outside the Portland metro area, is our annual event for the Commercial Real Estate Association, and we could celebrate all the great deals that were done in a given year. And I pulled in right behind this fine gentleman and found out we've got a common love for cars and a variety of different things. But I said, I like that guy. We need to get him in here to talk. And then I found out he was part of an organization, Revitalize Portland, which is tasked with bringing our fine city back to fineness, I guess I would say. So I've got sort of a question for you. How does a guy, you're a lawyer as in trade, but not in real estate at all. So what kind of lawyer are you, and how the heck did they rope you into running the organization you're at the helm of at this moment?
That's a great question. A simple answer is my wife, which is the answer to a lot of reasons why I do things. But basically, it was several years ago, she came to me, and this is in the midst of really the problems we were having with a lot of homelessness and people with drug addictions, just kind of being everywhere, camping on the streets. And Revitalize Portland, which was started by Jordan Snitzer, kind of as a response of he wanted to change the perception of Portland outside of Portland. More importantly, I think nationwide. He knew that that was going to be an issue, and we needed to start working on that kind of that issue, which we want people to have confidence in Portland, right? So Kara Unger at the time was the president, and she was in charge of one portion of Revitalize Portland Coalition, which was the criminal aspect of it. That's the homelessness, the drug addiction, the livability crimes, the graffiti, broken windows, that type of stuff. The problem is that they were all real estate professionals. They didn't know anything about criminal law.
And so they didn't know anything about crime.
Yeah, no, I mean, they just threw their head up. And so, you know, Kara comes to Jody, their friends, and Jody's like, I got a great idea. You should have my husband. Now, a little background on me. I started off being a public defender. I spoke Spanish. I was out in Washington County. I then moved back into Portland. I did delinquency, that's juvenile law, dependency, juvenile law, termination of parental rights as a defense attorney. And then Mike Schrunk, like I had said before, wonderful mentor of mine, the DA for 20 some odd years at the time, came to me and offered me a job. With the help of Judge Welch, who put in a good word for me, I got hired on the DA's office. And I think what was really important there is he told me not to be a different person. He didn't want me to be a different lawyer. He wanted me to be the same lawyer. I was prosecuted for 6-7 years, somewhere in there. Started with Nathan Vasquez, our DA now. Long and short of it is that I had a lot of criminal law experience. So my wife comes to me and says, hey, would you help? So I get on board with RPC and we start developing programs to deal with some of these issues because, unfortunately, the DA at the time, Schmidt, really was not stepping up to the plate. I hear he's a wonderful guy, but at the time he wasn't being a wonderful DA. So it was going to come down to a private group coming up with a program. I started working with the judges, with presiding Judge Matarazzo. We had a program going. The election comes up. Next thing we know, Nathan gets elected, and he starts putting in some of his own programs. So we didn't kind of have to follow through with that. That's how I got involved. I was on the board then. I think they liked my ability to schmooze. And I think
he is pretty good at that.
You know, it's one of my superpowers, yeah. I think, really. But at the end of the day, I think the board at RPC really liked my outside perspective. I really don't do a lot of real estate law at all. I do a tiny, tiny bit. I know what the problems are, especially since now I've been the president for a while.
And I would say RPC is Revitalized Portland Coalition.
Yes.
Just for everybody out there, if you're not in the Portland metro area.
Yeah. 10,000 members, 25 companies, all in the commercial real estate issue market, I should say, kind of all invested very heavily in making sure that Portland, Multnomah County, and Oregon stays thriving. Because if they're thriving as a group, right, if you guys are thriving as a group, right, we're going to do better. And that's the message that I think normal Portlanders and people from Multnomah County and Oregon needs to understand. Business is not a bad word. It's not the four-letter word, right? It is a partner. If they're doing well, if we see cranes out there, if we've got people doing 1031 exchanges, if we've got outside investment and money's coming here, if we have companies moving here, if you guys are all doing better, we are all going to do better, because that means one thing: revenue. And that's what we need. And that's where we're at.
Definitely. Definitely. So you're not originally from here. I'm not originally from here. Brad's back over here. He's not originally from here. And we all came to this area when Portland was this nice, glowing, wonderful place. And even when my kids, Cece, who was behind the cameras, when she was a little kid, my wife would, you know, haul my kids downtown, and they go play in the fountain, just have a great time down the waterfront and wander around. And you know, that doesn't happen that much anymore for a variety of reasons. So we wanted to get Jose in here in his position. He's sort of on the tip of what is potentially going to happen here. And I was sharing with Jose earlier, you know, we've handled tax deferred exchanges for 35 years now. And I moved here just to buy real estate with my brother in 1990. But you think about what the market was at that point in time, what this area represented versus today. And if we just look at our business, as I explained a few minutes ago, about, 40% of our business is regional here. And of that 40, 80% leaves. So the people that are buying that stuff are coming in from the outside, but our people here are just, we call them the rent control refugees. They're leaving because they're the erosion of their property ownership rights amongst everything else. And then we've also got some very unattractive tax situations here that need to be changed. But, you know, for us, I mean, this is my kid's home state, hometown. I want to see it do well. And it'd sure be nice. We had somebody, you know, that flew into town looking to talk to us about doing exchange work and talk to one of our investment people about buying some property. They flew in, went downtown, parked their car, went and had lunch. They thought they'd have lunch before meeting with the broker, came back out of the car. The car had been broken into, stuff stolen, and they did what? They drove back to the airport and left. So that was sort of, it sort of dovetails in. We were having a conversation about, you know, police and the budget and reduction of people there. But, you know, what we want to do today is we want to talk in the positive context, talk about what is going to bring people back and sort of what you're seeing. And you know, obviously every building sold is purchased by somebody. Every real estate transaction that occurs, it is very, very, very unusual for the buyer not to improve what is here. And if you look at, like, affordability, for example, you look at, you know, our governor says X houses need to be built, was it 38,000 or whatever that number is. Meanwhile, we've got a declining population. Schools are closing because they don't have enough students, so on and so forth. So do we really need to be creating all this stuff, or we need to take better care of what is here? But regardless, if you want to buy and build something, I had a conversation this morning with one of our clients that's looking at his 4% of a building is several million dollars. So it's a pretty big building. And it's upside down. He bought it in 2014. It's actually worth less today than what it was. We're talking about something that comes up and bites people called phantom gains. So in his situation, they're worried about their inability to get this property refinanced. And even if you do get it refinanced, you're replacing, let's say, 3.5 or 3.8 money with 6 or 7% money. The thing doesn't work. So what people don't understand, you could lose a property foreclosure if the debt's an excessive basis. You've got phantom gain on an income property. You can't afford to lose it, almost, right? So So we're talking about, and you know, he came back down to development costs and building new stuff for this affordability or taking care of the old stuff. So every real estate transaction, we want market velocity. So you think about who's involved with a single real estate deal. You as a lawyer might be, you know, tax people, finance people, you know, appraisers, inspectors, Home Depot, for goodness sake, the brokers, title escrow. I mean, you've got all Everybody of those wins. People with one transaction. It's all tax revenue, and it needs to happen. So the conversation today is, how are we going to help Portland get sort of back? What do you see that's happening that gives you hope that Portland will be back to what it was? And tell us what you feel like is useful about the coalition. And we've got a series of questions we'll go over. Also.
Sounds good. You know, I think it's good. I'm this type of person. I like to keep it positive. There's a lot to get negative about. I mean, if you think about what Portland lost, that's one conversation. I think the conversation is changing, though. We always used to talk about what Portland's lost. Well, what's changed and what have we gained is kind of the issue. And what I am seeing now, and I told you, I would Revitalize Portland Coalition, therefore me, I was invited to this listening session for the mayor, one of a handful of people. And we talked about assets. What does Portland have as an asset? And Portland has several things as an asset that are not going to change ever. And they're going to save our little fannies. One is that river. Okay. We need to take advantage of that asset. We're not doing it. You mentioned Vancouver, Washington. They took advantage of it. They did what needed to be done. And they're having a kind of a reopening.
A renaissance.
Thank you. But if you take a look at our assets, we've got the river. We need to take advantage of that. Two, we've got the mountains and we've got the ocean. And we live right between those two. We live in an immensely beautiful area, and that's not going to change. Well, God willing, but it's not going to, right? So we have that advantage over other cities, right? What we need to change, and what I think is changing, and what I see is that conversation is being had between the private and the public sector, nonprofits, the governor. Everyone's coming together, and we're seeing that the time to change is now. Now, I am a very positive person. I see the change. I go out on a first Thursday downtown, and it's back, baby. It is.
Really?
You got to go out on a first Thursday, go to the Pearl, and your mind is going to be blown. You don't see the problems. They're really not there. There's some. And I think Portland has its fair share now. It's still an issue. It's getting better. But people are starting to have what I think we need, confidence. People are starting to have that confidence. I can go back downtown. I can have some fun. We have a lot of work to do, but it's that confidence that we need to build. And by our communications, our conversations that are starting to happen at the level of people that really can affect change, that's what's changed for us. That ability to identify a problem, but also tackle it. Cornell Wesley from Prosper Portland, you know, he's going to bring a lot of new business here, but he needs tools. And I think the mayor and the city and people are recognizing we need to take advantage of him. What he's done in the past and his own personal success, he could bring here, but he can't do it unless we give him the tools to do it, which means some sort of tax break for the companies that need to move here, to invest back into here, to bring employees here, to buy those buildings, right? To start the exchange process, to get your friend's building out of the hole that it's in, and those phantom gains become actual gains, right? That only happens if we can create that excitement and that confidence that extends past Portland and goes nationwide. We have one of the best airports in the world.
Beautiful.
In the world.
Yeah.
We are set. We have a professional basketball team. We have the women's sports now. Hopefully we keep the Blazers, right? Let's keep it positive. We will. We have everything set now, and that's what's changed. We are on the precipice of a positive change. We're not in the depth of the pain right now, and that's what I see.
So when you're dealing with, and I'm just going to sort of reset that conversation I had with you a few minutes ago. So we had recently interviewed somebody that had a cider house in the Pearl, which for those of you outside Portland, Pearl's a very nice area of the city, more family oriented, but wonderful restaurants and little storefronts, mom and pop storefronts and all, not big stuff.
And real quick, the thing that the Pearl has is that it has people living and working in the same area.
Yes.
You know, it has that perfect density.
It's like New York. You're walking place to place. You know, yeah. Not New York's not perfect density, obviously, but you everybody's walking. It's like nobody walks in LA because everything's too far away, right?
Right.
But you think of Portland, and we used to do that city walk, and it didn't take long to get everywhere in town. Right. But you know, this gentleman, a restaurant for 10 years. I mean, restaurants are brutal business to have it 10 years and close it down. And I, you know, I asked him why. I said, why are you closing after 10 years? It's obviously worked out okay. He says, well, okay, I've had broken into 3 times in the last 6 months. I can't turn in the insurance. They're going to cancel me. City doesn't do anything for me. On top of that, the parking meters were increased the time of operation, the cost of operation, and reduced the time you could stay to 2 hours, which for a restaurant, 2 hours or a cider house? I mean, you go watch right now what's going on. We've got the soccer games going on, right? How long's a soccer game?
At least 3.
Yeah. So, okay, what are you going to do?
Right.
Right? And a lot of them won't allow you to feed the meter.
Right.
So we say, no, you got to go out and move the thing. And then the final straw was the increased business license stuff. So, you know, I think, unfortunately, we've been in a situation where the city has seen their revenue dropping, and instead of figuring out, okay, hey, why is this dropping and dealing with those issues, and you made the comment earlier, which is bullseye, increasing your revenue, I mean, get the people there, have things working, and your tax revenue is automatically going to increase, even though the tax rate might have decreased.
Right.
But right now, they're just sort of watching everything dry up and trying to squeeze more and more, which just keeps people out, which is not the way to do it. But I think we've got an opportunity. You start looking at the big buildings that have changed, and we talk about Big Pink. Everybody talks about Big Pink. But you think about that building or Montgomery. You think about Palm Desert during probably the 80s, 90s. I had all that foreign money come in. They built up everything, but they got all these properties, the debt service so high that they couldn't work. And I think during that last recession, from that time to now, we've seen nothing but up, and it really wasn't realistic, and it was based upon ridiculous interest rates, really, free money, and it can't work. So I think a lot of the problems we have are not just because of our regional thing, a variety of circumstances have gotten us here, but now with these buildings trading where they are, they have a chance of working. And
right.
So I think the city, as these dominoes fall, obviously the tax revenue is going to be impacted with the reduced property taxes, which is a whole nother conversation. But you know, what are you seeing with the coalition sort of from the city or the regional government's perspective that's giving you hope and that would inspire our foreign investors, meaning out-of-state investors, to actually come to Oregon once again and actually come to Portland?
You know, the thing that I see, and I had said this before, is that I not only have identified the problems that we all agree on, that we are lacking the businesses and the persons coming into Portland, into Oregon, and investing. What can we do to get those people here? I think getting Cornel Wesley was a big step towards that. He identifies the problem. The thing about that gentleman that impresses me the most, and this is what's so encouraging, is that he's working with our government to make businesses come here. We've identified him as a tool. We need to give him those tools. And I think we're at that point where we're saying, and the mayor said this, he said, we've got to act fast and we've got to think outside the box and we've got to do something big. And he's absolutely right. If we can do these things, and I think, like I said, the encouraged thing here is that we don't have a government that, or at least a mayor and his partners, and the ones that were sitting at that table I was at that conversation, identifying the problem and saying, yes, here's the problem, here's what we can do about it, here are some projects. I mean, we had 3 groups present projects that were incredible projects that will really help us quite a bit. A little plug for RPC, we have a program coming in October called This Is What Success Looks Like. We're working with City of Portland, and we have city leaders from 3 other cities, Seattle, Denver. They've got a great program up there. They're doing stuff with their waterfront that's just amazing, which is what we need to be doing, the asset,
yeah,
right?
I agree.
And And we have partners in, we have some families here in this town, the Menasches, the Schnitzers, I mean, you name them. We have Swickard, who just bought Big Pink. We have people investing back into Portland at a really large level, taking some of these distressed, I guess is what you guys, people call them, properties, mm-hmm. and scooping them back up, taking advantage of it, taking the loss, right? Whether that helps them or not, they're doing it. They've invested back into Portland, right? We need that to become contagious, because right now Portland is going to become a deal. Portland is going to be the buy-in, and we're right there. And it's the people that recognize that right now and start investing that are really going to reap dividends, because it's coming.
Well, and I think if you look at, you know, the couple of those names you just mentioned, you think about, they are, you know, they believe in the city. I mean, they're going to. What's interesting to me is you're talking to individuals that pick stuff up and they can hang on to these and work through a lean time. You start looking at institutional money, that money's sitting here. It's got to be producing a return, an ROI, right? Otherwise, people won't buy it and they can't just sit, have the money parked.
Right.
So I think that some of these turns, these buildings are being picked up by people that are invested and willing to sit and take the time. They know, they're not looking at, okay, today it's worth this, tomorrow it's going to be worth this. It's a long play,
right?
But they're prepared for it and they'll reap the benefit at the end of the day. So we're just looking at, okay, to give people hope. If you're looking at coming in, you know, the great thing about real estate is it's one of the only investments you can make that doesn't have to go up in value to make you money, right? I mean, right. Everyone's talking about gold. Well, how does gold make you money? It's inflation. It's got to be its value, but the real estate doesn't do that. But in this situation, at the end of the day, it always will if you just hang on to it long enough. And one of my mentors, a guy that's deceased at this point, wonderful guy, Bob Nelson, he said, hey, real estate's not a get-rich-quick scheme. It's a get-rich-surely-but-slowly scheme with one golden rule. Don't get yourself in a situation where you have to sell in a recession. So you think about what's happening with these buildings, and there are people that we're sitting in a building right now that is, I don't know what the public number is, if it's 35% occupied or what, it might say it's 60. You walk through it.
Right.
I'd say it's 10% occupied, right? So you got shadow tenancy and everything else going on.
But it's
on.
A beautiful building.
Yeah, it's a beautiful building.
It's a wonderful building.
And the thing is that at current debt service, it's unsustainable. But for somebody to pick it up and reset to now have it working at a debt service level that actually can work, it'll give that next buyer that chance. And it's all for sale.
Right.
But so, you know, what's the right price? But to have people have a positive outlook and you know, once again, that's part of why you're here, is like, look, this is the deal. We're here today, but don't look at us and think we're just going to be sitting here forever. Have some hope. And that hope, Obama had hope and change, right? I mean, it was his slogan.
Right.
You know, so, I mean, that's sort of where we are right here.
Well, we are. I think the opportunity is here. If you start thinking about this from just a market of, you've got to hop in at that right point. You don't want to hop in too late, mm-hmm. right? Everything's going to be hot and that boat will pass you by as an investor. You'd be like, man, if I was just there 5 years ago, this is the 5 years ago. This is that moment, right? This is where you come in and you go, I bought right at the right time, right? Is it a risk? Surely it is. But if you see some of this bigger money making these choices to stay here and to reinvest, that surely should be a sign. Hey, look, something's going to happen. I got to get in early and get in quick. And from a community standpoint, I can report and say, we've identified problems. We know what the issues are, and we're going to do something about it. Right? A lot of those livability crimes that you're talking about with the Pearl and your friend with the cider house, right? I mean, I used to be a prosecutor. Like I said, those are the type of crimes that you need to have prosecutors and the police addressing on a regular basis, right? If your budget can't handle it, you won't be able to do it. But we're seeing a mayor and we're seeing people say, hey, wait a minute, we can't sustain this anymore. We've got to do something about the effective tax rate. We've got to do something about revenue. Because that's the way we take care of these livability crimes. And that's how we ensure, one, people don't leave, like your friend. And number two, we create opportunities for people to come here. Your person who came here and unfortunately got their car broken into and left, that's just so sad to hear, because what a missed opportunity. you know, I would want them to say to them, come back. You know, that's going to happen really in any city. And it will. Depends on what you live in the car. I used to be a prosecutor at that level. That's the little, you don't leave stuff in your car that people can see. Yeah. I mean, those are the little things. But at the end of the day, come back. Yeah. You know, we've all got those problems. And I'm going to circle all the way back with you and say this. At the best time in Portland, back in the 90s when I moved here, right? And I was going to become a young law student. And I lived down in Northwest. It was still a place you didn't leave your car. I left my car unlocked. It was gritty. There's a reason Gus Van Sant did his films here. Those nitty gritty films, yeah. Drugstore Cowboy, right? There's a reason he did. It's because Portland has always had a little bit of an edge. Yeah. And you know what? That's not going to go away. But you know what? Portland is going to be the city, not only that it was, but it's going to be something new because we can no longer rest on those laurels. We're creating our new opportunities. And that's the excitement that I see when I sit down with the mayor and these partnerships, that the conversation is happening. We're going to do something about it.
You think about the Opportunity Zone stuff, the QOZ or OZ stuff, and every governor was able to dictate what regions or zones were going to be, or where they were going to be, right? Right. And the whole thing, I was opposed to it for selfish reasons because, you know, we were talking about cars earlier. We used to be able to do exchanges of cars, boats, planes, aircraft, businesses, all the personal property stuff, artwork. But and I love doing the cars. We had a guy make $700,000 in 6 months on a car. We had a guy make $6 million on a McLaren F1 in 2 years. The one, I'm more, actually not one percenters, probably the 0.1%ers, right? So that's where, you know, people sort of beat on Trump, like, oh, the wealthy are making out. No, the wealthy lost a whole pile right there with the loss of 1031 for personal property stuff.
Right.
You look at the property tax deductions, you know, 10,000 state and local. Okay, even the 40 that just got passed is not 40 for people that make money. It's back to 10. So there's lots of things that really hurt, you know, wealthier people with those tax reform measures. But if you look at, you know, think about QOZs and, you know, we don't need to beat things up too much, but you think about Vancouver waterfront, that was a QOZ. That was the project that was intended to be done with that whole process. And, you know, rural QOZs are even more attractive with this latest tax reform measure. But you look at the other side of the coin and what Portland, you know, we look at the Ritz-Carlton, right? Which is, you know, in the Pearl, when was the Pearl ever in need of stimulus?
Right.
Right. So it's sort of one of those things, but with that said, think today and now back to what you guys are working on with Revitalized Portland, you think about, okay, the waterfront sort of in play. You look at Ross Island. I mean, you've got essentially a Superfund site that might actually be cleaned up. And so back to your point, and think of another state where you could be snow skiing in the morning, you could be surfing in the afternoon.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, I used to snow ski and water ski all the time, just back and forth, LO and you know, right. Lake Oswego and up there. But not many places you can do that. I mean, I spent a lot of time in San Diego. To get to a mountain to ski is a long ways away, right?
And you know, I think you bring up a really good point. And I think that point is a couple things here that come to mind. I just want to say this really quick. Going back to our assets, the natural assets that we have, right? It's not only the river and where we're located between the mountain and the coast, and literally one of the best summers you will ever experience, period, ever. Sorry, I'm hard stop. I come from Colorado. I've traveled the world.
Yeah.
There, you're not going to experience a better summer, more temperate and more beautiful and more green and luscious than Portland, Oregon, and this area and this region. Jordan Schnitzer, he came up with a program off the cuff. I swear to God, this came up. I wish I could take credit for this, but he has this program he called Summerbirds. And was like, he said, so what's the temperature, average temperature going to be like in Phoenix? Or down there in Arizona, or in New Mexico, or in Nevada, or all these places, that they're spending like hundreds of days above 100 degrees, right? He says, we need to have summer birds. People will escape their summers and come here and move here. And where do we want them to live? Downtown Portland. That's what we should be working on. We should be working on not only those people, making it attractive for them to come here, giving them every opportunity, giving them every break possible to do that. But we need to be giving the people that build those buildings. And Jordan said we need to tear down about 40% of the buildings downtown.
Wow.
And we need to change them and make them different and make that a place like the Pearl, where you've got that density, that perfect mix of livability and work, where people can exist and do everything they need to within their own few blocks, right? Flip side of that, or bigger part of that, is I would love it if the message could get out to investors. If you've got some big project, if you got some money that you want to come and do it in a place that's beautiful, come give Oregon a try. But no, dictate your terms. Tell us what you need. Contact me, right? Contact groups like me. We can go to the city. We can go to the government. We can go to the state government. We need those people coming to Oregon and saying, you want us? Here's our terms. Tell us what you need. We want to make that happen. And it's not just us. It's our governor, our mayor.
So I'm going to call you on that. So sure. How do they reach you, or who should they reach out to, since we're right here on this topic right now?
Well, if you get online and go to RPC, Revitalize Portland Coalition, my executive director is Kelly Ross. And he is the best way to get through me. And you can contact me, look me up in the bar. I am Jose Cienfuegos. I think maybe one of the few Jose's that are actually on the bar. But I would love to have a conversation with anybody who thinks that they are going to be able to take that chance and opportunity, because we'll go back to what we were talking about. You used to have a 930 Turbo. Okay. Now, for those people out there who don't know, that's a Porsche that is now a holy grail car. That is a Porsche that will command almost anything that person who owns one wants. And this man here owned one, and unfortunately doesn't anymore.
Yeah.
But there was a time when you could pick up that car pretty good.
Yeah.
Right? Now is that time. We are the 930 Turbo of the nation.
Of 2026.
That's right. Mm-hmm. You need to find us now. You need to make that purchase, because soon you're not going to be able to. You're going to miss that boat. It's going to sail right past you.
I think it's well said. I think, you know, I've got a good buddy that Ed Popkins is his name, but he's the guy. He's always a salesman, always asking for everything. He says, you never ask, the answer is always no. So I think you hit the nail on the head. You basically throw it out there, and it's like, this is what I'll do it at. And they go, yay. If not, they might come back to you 6 months or a year later and say, okay, hey, you still willing to do that? I'll do it today. But, you know, the reality is people need to be able to do the deal at what's going to make sense for them. And I think that's a great example. You know, there's always one of the guys, my mentors basically said, there's always another bus, right? So don't worry about what was, worry about what's going to work to get you going, you know, from here forward.
Absolutely.
Portland is one of those places that it really is a beautiful place, and it's got so much potential. And I think we've just been sitting here in this stagnation area, but it's now feeling like there's going to be some change. And, you know, you talk to somebody like Jose and understand, you know, reach out to the people that can make a difference. And, you know, my father-in-law was a very charitable guy. He said, well, how do you decide what you're going to get involved with?
Right.
He says, it's really easy. I said, well, what do you mean by that? He says, go and do things where you can make a difference. So, you know, them hauling Jose into this organization, you know, you're making a difference there. And, you know, anybody that's going to come in and make the investments like Swigert or Schnitzer, any of those people, Menashe's, you know, they're in there, and it's like, well, okay, they got the stuff, but they're taking a chance, and they're here for the long ride.
Right.
And they will make a difference. The city's going to be making changes. It's just a question of when. And to be able to invest, if you're looking at taking real estate investment trust, REIT money, or some investment fund money to come in here and do it, it's probably not going to work because it's too long a play. But for those people that want to do things here and see there's going to be opportunities there, and you're seeing a positive move to
get there, you know, and that's it. We like the program we have coming up in October. We're going to invite three business leaders, or not business, community leaders to come in and talk about the big projects that they did in their cities that cost millions and billions of dollars, right?
Yes.
And they were big changes. You know, you talk about Denver and the changes that they've made in their downtown, specifically around their baseball field. You know, I remember I used to drive a truck from my father and from Fort Collins to Denver, and I used to pick up foam rubber from a building right there where that stadium now, Coors Field, I think it is. And it was a horrible place. I mean, that part of Denver was so bad. The building I picked up in, every time I went in there, I thought it was going to fall down. But someone had the thought to go in there and say, here's what we could do with this massive area and change it. Then we had people who were able to invest in that, right, and take that chance. But what they did was like, hey, Denver, what can you do for us to get there? Our program in October is, I want our leaders, and mayor's going to come to our thing, and hopefully the governor will send someone or herself and hear, why are you not doing this in Portland? What are your impediments? Because they need to hear this. They're ready. I know our mayor is. Our mayor is willing to hear, what do you need to come here? And we're going to try to get this thing done. We need that opportunity, and I think it's time for those people to take that opportunity, that chance.
So Schnitzer's comment on buildings getting knocked down changed, really we're just talking about taking business office space and creating residential space. Is that what we're looking?
It's interesting.
What his thought is?
Yeah, I think his thought is mixed-use building, yeah. Creating more of a mixed-use building. And I remember his comment was, and Jordan, please do not kill me if I get it wrong, but I'm pretty sure I got you right, is that they were six stories and below. There were too many of them that needed to be raised and that they could be changed and changed pretty quickly. And that we could make them into attractive environments for people to come spend their money like on a summer home from these really hot areas and spend some of their summer times here.
Well, yeah, I think your comment, the summer birds, okay? So I, you know, go back and forth here to San Diego during the winter because why?
Yeah.
The snowbird deal, right?
Yeah, the little thing called rain that happens every once in a while here.
But with that said, if I look at my neighbors down south during the summertime, Scottsdale, Phoenix, Palm Desert, it's all of those people. So the maritime world, all the marinas and all that stuff, you look at those boats, and I always laugh because, you know, to me, the boat's name's up here, and for whatever reason, the city down below, my belief is it should be the home port of the boat. Because right. It's like, if you're lost at sea, something happens, where does that boat live? Where are you from?
I thought that was a rule. This isn't?
But it's not. You'll have Scottsdale. You'll have Phoenix. You'll have, I mean, all these inland things. Like, what's
you're
the
right.
point? It's like, why do
that.
People have that on the boat, right? But it's changed.
Right.
I believe it started this way. But you know, that whole deal. I mean, it's to have the place here during, I mean, I joke, it's July 5th. You know, I came back up last Wednesday. It's like, okay, because it's been 100 degrees here and it's the classic 70s in San Diego, right? But you got the May, gray, June gloom down there. So he's like, okay, well, it's getting gray there. Let's get up north. And it's been blistering hot to get here. It's been raining the whole time because it's not July 5th yet.
Right.
So, but from next week on, we'll be in great space through October, to your point.
And that is to my point. And yeah. Everybody knows that you don't schedule anything until 4th of July. So July 5th, that's right. Yeah. Everybody knows that. You don't schedule weddings, not outside, nothing outside until like you're not guaranteed anything. And in fact, this week has been a lot of rain that we needed, but it's beautiful. It's gorgeous outside right now. And it's going to be 82 for our 4th of July.
Yeah.
Are you kidding me? Doesn't get better than that, Pope people. Does not get better than that.
It's what they say, God's country.
That's right. We're sitting on a gold mine.
It's the long days too. I mean, during the summer, you can't believe how long the days are. And you know, conversely, in the wintertime, how short they are. And I think that was the hardest thing growing up in Santa Cruz and you know, living in SoCal for a while, then moving back up here in 90. I think it wasn't the rain as much as it was just during the middle of the winter, the short days. I mean, going to work dark, getting home at dark, and that type of stuff.
It's hard
that
to
changed.
Get used to.
Yeah. Oh,
I remember that from moving here from Colorado.
Yeah.
It was hard. But the other side of that coin is I have never been someplace that's more green. I mean, year around. If you come from someplace like Colorado or Scottsdale or any of those places.
Or Texas.
Yeah, it is the word tan and brown is the one that controls mostly. You fly here and your eyes just get wide open because all of a sudden as you descend out of that 36,000 feet and you come into the Hood River Valley to make that approach into Portland and you look down and all you see is green and forest and a huge river. It doesn't get better than
that. You fly past Hood.
Oh, one side's Hood. The other side's Mount St. Helens. Yeah. You got Rainier. I mean, it's the place to be. It really is. And it's a secret we need to let out. We kept it for too long. I mean, I'll tell you that right now.
So, you know, we talked a little bit about my bar guy, the cider house, and he closed, and I joke, I've got a good friend, Ed, his last name will remain quiet, but he owned US Outdoor, and which is, was a company that's been here a long time.
That's where you went for bargain coats and exactly. stuff like that. I love that place.
So I used to give him a hard time when we had all, he'd get a store broken into and I'd see all these high-end tents on the street. So the reason I bring that up is I'm seeing a lot fewer tents. I'm seeing less of that stuff. So as far as progress, what's being done, we talked a little bit about, police dropping as far as numbers of their budgets dropping some, but now I think we're sort of entering a new place where the city and to the mayor, people are starting to come around to understand, hey, we got to do something to this to get people back downtown and to make a difference, as my father-in-law used to say. So when we look at the national news today, and we say, well, gee, Portland's number 80 of 81 as far as, as far as attractiveness for a city or where it's going. Do you think that that's accurate? And for people that are pointing that as a problem going forward, we've cited several examples of optimism and reasons to do things. What do you see changing from the city and that gives you hope? And I guess when we start talking about like knocking down those buildings and all, do you see the city changing in any way to accommodate some of these redevelopments? And the primary reason I ask that is, our prime business is tax deferred exchanges. We've got 180 days to get projects done. We do a whole variety of different transactions. One of them is an improvement exchange. An improvement exchange means we're going to buy something, we're going to build on it, and convey the improved property to the taxpayer. I can't do that in Oregon. I can't do that in California. I can't do that in Washington. I can't do that in Hawaii. It's like the whole Western United States, I'm stuck. If I go to Texas, we do a project there, our client walks into the planning office, walks out with a permit, and they're going. So if you look at the cost of ownership or development, it's not, people don't understand that time, that downtime. If it's 2 years to get a shovel in the ground, the debt service, the carrying costs that developer is dealing with during that whole permitting process. Are we seeing movement with the city that's giving you off?
I am so glad you brought this up, because the answer to that is an enthusiastic yes.
Yeah.
And the reason why is, I'll start at the end of my story. The end of my story is that the end of that conversation, that listening meeting that we had with the mayor turned to us and said, when I talk about doing things quick and hard and making the choices that are big and looking outside the box, I mean it. And he literally looked at everyone and said, if you see a code that you want changed, let me know about it. Wow. So I'll tell you what I'm doing. I told my executive director, we have two lawyers for two firms that do nothing but real estate law on our board of directors. I said, get a hold of them and tell them to make a wish list of every code that involves transactions or building that we want change, or make the process smoother or better. Because if the mayor says, I want to hear this, then we better give him what he needs. But what that implies to me is that he's going to listen. And we're in a new time now. We have an executive mayor now. We have a different form of government. Now, in some ways, I'm not too happy with it. More voices, I kind of drowns it out. But we've given one person the ability to make some changes that does not need the entirety of the council, right? He can make some decisions on his own in an executive role that can really start the ball rolling in the right direction. And he has said, give it to us. Well, I'm going to give it to him. And that's why I say, if we've got people out there who want to be here, tell us what you need. Tell me and groups like myself what you need. We will advocate for that because we have a government that is opening their ears and saying, okay, we need to do something different here. This is what we need. Then no better time then is to jump on this and say, okay, here's what we need. I think, one, that that's going to change. Two, Portland for a long time has just had the worst series of making rules to get in its own way, all for the just the best ideas in the world. But at the end of the day, when I first got into this, I didn't know, and I still don't know a lot about real estate, right? I'm going to admit this, right? I know enough to be dangerous, but I remember Jody telling me the process of doing a development. And she was talking about a building downtown called the Dumbbell Building. It's right there on the Burnside Bridge, okay, right? I think I got this right. Yeah. But there's some very subjective board that you have to clear that just says they don't like it, and then you have to change things. And apparently they told him they didn't like the look of his windows that he put on his building. And he had to change every window to the tune of like several million dollars because this board, which is a subjective analysis, said, we don't like the way that that looks. And it's a weird looking building to begin with. Sorry, don't mean it. But it is, it's a strange looking building. It's beautiful in its own way. It's striking, I love it. But if this is that building, don't change the windows. What are you talking about? One, two is great. You're making these subjective ideas and thoughts about some of these parts of the town. But then I drive down Woodstock, which is a place that should be just developing so beautifully. Yeah. And someone's giving them green lights to the most boring projects I've ever seen in my life. But over on Foster, you're seeing some great buildings go up. Interesting. We need to have some predictable codes that give builders the expectation of what they're going to get. And we need to fast track this. We need to go from thought to shovel, right? In half or a quarter of the time we're doing it now.
Well, you've got people making decisions on what they think is right. And meanwhile, the person that's got the skin in the game is lost control of what he or she's trying to do with a project.
Absolutely.
And the autonomy is gone. And I mean, you think about HOAs and what they do to an area, but you think about the overlays in a city. And, you know, what's interesting is, I mean, do we want everybody to look the same? No. Okay, so the buildings is the same way. I mean, you think about the skyline on any interesting city, you're going to see a variety of things there. But I think, yeah, you're really hitting the nail on the head with stuff. You get these people that are controlling these projects. They've never done anything in the first place, but they're making decisions, driving costs through the roof, or changes, or delays. All of cost money, and they're ultimately not going to be on the hook for the problems they've created with these changes. So, yeah, you need to clean them out of the way and really straighten out that process. And then you're going to have stuff happening, but it's that carrying cost, all these things that people don't understand when they get into a project. Your wife does understand, but all these things cost money. And if you want affordability, you got to clean up the process.
Well, from an outsider's point of view, when I heard that and my wife told me about that process,
yeah,
I couldn't believe it.
Yeah.
I was like, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard in my life.
Yeah.
There's really this thing? She's like, oh yeah, it's the something board. And I was like, I can't believe that. Here's the thing. If we can improve and let a builder do what he needs to do and do it quickly so he doesn't have those carrying costs, so he's not losing money until he gets his first rental payment or his lease payment or whatever it is, if we can shorten that time and we can get that building going and it becomes successful, then the buildings around it that exist are necessarily going to gain from this. It's like the best grenade in the world going off with the best shrapnel, right? Everything gets hit with this beautiful shrapnel of everything's gone up in value now, and now people are interested in coming in and doing more building, more buying, more exchanges. This is what we need.
Well, you made a comment earlier about the revenue and looking at what a project's doing or what something's doing versus, you know, the taxes, and everybody's just reaching for the increased tax lever right now is how they're going to gain revenue. You think about the 2 years the building's sitting there, maybe it's dirt, maybe it's empty, maybe whatever. What's the tax revenue on that thing during that 2 years versus if it was done in a year, you've got a whole nother year of the thing operating and all the tax revenue being generated by it. So if they get out of the way.
And that's what we need to do. We need to get out of the way of progress. Progress is really knocking on our door. And the mayor, when we were having this discussion, he said it himself. We have four aces and we keep trying to give two of them away. And I thought that was a great way to describe it. And he's identified it. He's not going to give away those aces anymore. He's going to hold on to them because he knows that we've got something good here. We just need to take advantage of it. And we need to encourage people to get here. But more importantly, we need to change the story. Because honestly, if you go someplace else, you go to Texas, if you fly to Charleston and you say, I'm from Portland, they look at you and they go, are you okay? Are you okay? Are you fine?
I tell people, don't hold it against me.
Well, because
my whole job is to keep their money theirs. Yeah. And if they're dealing with somebody from Portland, it's like, I don't know if I trust them.
Well, the amazing thing is that they think that you're still in Riot Town, right? And you're like, okay, you have to explain to these people. Those riots were in two square blocks, right? Yes, they were nationalized, and we became like this poster child for a politician, right? But at the end of the day, that's gone, people. We're fine. We're doing great. And here's the other problem that Portland has. You asked about this, and I didn't have to answer your question. The way that people are measuring, we're 80 out of 81 and things like that. It all comes down to statistics and how you're measuring the question, right, or measuring the data. And the data is pretty simple. We have a very large urban downtown. We really do. For our size of city, we have these outside neighborhoods that kind of beyond downtown. We have Happy Valley. We have suburbs. They're doing just fine, right? We are doing just great. But if you take an analysis of that large area that we have that is distressed right now, that needs investment, that needs some like energy, right? Mm-hmm. Then we're going to get some skewed results about where we are in things. That and its management of money and its the taxation issues. We have a government that's willing to listen now and change, and that's the important part.
I think the funny thing about 80 of 81 or whatever it might be, the one thing I think I learned in stat in college was you can get whatever result you want picking the right sample group, right? Ask the right question. Ask whatever you want to steer it. And right. So it's like all this stuff is, with that said, you think about, okay, things that can make a difference for our community and where you sort of see them today and where they're sort of headed. Let's just look at NATO Parkway. Okay, they've taken lanes away. I swear people feel like nobody wants you in a car anymore.
Right.
Okay? I know you like cars. I like cars. I like to build drive. I had a client one time who says, hey, if they can tell me where to put my table saw on the bus, I'd take my bus to work. But it doesn't work for people in the Western United States, right? You've got density of an urban area, sure, that works. In New York, you're better off getting out of your car and getting a subway or walking or whatever than driving a lot of times. Here, we don't have that. It's to drive from one side of town to the other, we're talking distance.
Right.
When I moved up here, people asked me, it's like, well, I moved to Salem, Oregon, of all places when I first came up here. And, state capitals typically lag the rest of state's economy. Portland had turned in 88, let's say, so we're at 90. And then my dad was just a fishing nut. So he wanted a place that he could go out in the backyard and just fish off the deck or whatever. So he finds a house up in Mill City, of all places, the bustling metropolis, 1,800 people, right? Old timber town. So he bought an old timber family's house, and the house is sitting there empty, end of a gated road. And mom's like, hey, Tom and I are working and just redoing these old houses. And they're saying, well, would you mind living in the place? Because we don't want it empty up there. So, we end up living in Mill City, of all places, this area. But you start thinking about distance. And the reason I bring Mill City up is like, well, where do you live and where are you working? So, yes, yeah, about 30 miles. 30 miles? I said, yeah, but 30 miles in Oregon means, about 30 minutes, which is like 5 miles in Santa Cruz. Okay. Right. So, you've got that distance stuff.
That's a very good comparison. I like that. Yeah.
So you start thinking about Washington State, and I really feel like they're shooting themselves in the foot, which is once again another opportunity for us here in Oregon right now. Because you think about what they're doing with wealth taxes, everything else. You start thinking about Camas Washugo. You think about Vancouver and what people were doing. They were like, okay, I'm going to go live in Vancouver. I don't have income tax. Then I'm going to go buy my stuff. You look at Janssen Beach. I'm going to go across the bridge, buy all my stuff with no sales tax, and just do the best of both. And now Washington is sort of like now putting income taxes in place and other things. Uh-huh. They're not quote unquote income tax, but right. So they're not as attractive. So I can see where more people are going to be sticking around locally here. With that said, we've got two big issues. You know, traffic keeps increasing, and you know that road tax that she just tried to shove down our throat that got recalled, right. Obviously.
Yeah, but people did not like that, did
no.
they? Yeah. I'm sorry, but I saw that coming
yeah.
a million miles away.
Yeah.
You know, I'm really shocked that a lot of people didn't, or that anybody thought that that was really going to go through. But I'm sorry, I interrupted.
No, but I mean, you start looking and you think, my youngest brother, he's an MAI appraiser, top of the appraiser. He doesn't do houses and stuff, just big chunks of land and vineyards and hunting, fishing property, stuff like that. But he says, look, there's more gas that's ever been sold, more tax revenue from that gas that's ever been made.
Right.
They don't maintain the roads. They're not building roads. Where's the money, right? So then you start looking at our projects. We've got the Interstate Bridge, and we've got the Rose Quarter, and we were talking about the Blazers with the Rose Garden. So there's a variety of things going on. But you think about, okay, with Portland Diamond Project too, and that, you know, where they were talking about putting that down Zidell Marine Shipyards, which there's no easy way in or out of. Are you seeing the city or the region with your talks with these different groups? Are they looking to do anything to help with the traffic and congestion and make any changes?
You know, honest answer is that traffic hasn't really come up. No. Probably something that needs to be analyzed. You know, certainly. I think it's something, you know, the problem with, I'll say it for me personally, is that I haven't been personally exposed to super bad traffic. I've lived in Fort Collins, Colorado, which bad traffic was cruising on a Friday night, you know, up and down College Avenue. Like, think American Graffiti. I just dated myself. So I went from there to Eugene to here, living, right? And I see the traffic here. It's kind of bad sometimes. I think the more that we stick projects downtown, like if we put that stadium in Zidell, right? I'm going to 100% agree with you. How are people getting there? Now, I don't know if you heard about the ferry project that they had.
Yes.
That's going to be big enough. No, probably not. But it was a great little idea that they were going to ferry people around on a river because a river is our asset and it's actually there,
exactly.
Right? So I think it's something that we need to take into consideration. I think some of the projects that I've seen that involve the waterfront really are a continuation of some of the great things that we have downtown going to the waterfront and then making waterfront itself a bit of a fun destination.
Exactly.
Which I don't think is going to cause a lot of car traffic. What it's going to cause is people traffic, and that's what we want.
Well, and water traffic too.
I mean, absolutely.
You think about the old Newport Bay down there on River Place.
Right.
You know, the place has been empty, which really boggles my mind. It's been empty for so long. But you think about getting people down there. You think of 4th of July, there's boats out there. They're anchored last weekend waiting for the Blues Festival and all that, which is a great, great event. But yeah, I think all that stuff's ripe for it. It's just interesting to see, you know, that ingress, egress, different times. So you know, back to the car comment, you think about your when you were working with Team Continental.
All right.
So that was probably during the 2000s.
Somewhere in
so
there,
So you think about, I don't know where you lived at that point, but I would go out and I'd drive with them once in a while. But I remember so often I'd go out the track, spend the day on the track, and at the end of the day, your rubber's burned, your brakes are burned, and your nerves are a little bit tattered by the end of the day till you say, okay, now I've gotten all that speed out of my...
Hopefully
out of me. But, you know, people say, well, it's sort of crazy. You're just out there with all those maniacs going so fast. I said, no, the scary thing is when you get back on I-5 heading home, because it was traffic everywhere.
It was quite
and people
off.
Are
it
was not...
It like at 5, and you're like, exactly. I got to go home.
Yeah, right. Yeah. And then you just sort of, I remember so often driving back from the track, and it's like you're tired, and it's just all the people there, and that was the deal. I went and looked, total transparency, I went and looked at property up on Jansen Beach last Sunday. You know, right. Walked through, I wanted to check out some property up there, and went and did it, and you know, got on the road to head back down. It was probably 3:30 or so in the afternoon, and you know, once again, northbound, southbound, you've got that stuff. And I'm going, right. Okay, this is why you don't live up there. You know, I mean, if you're going back and forth necessarily, unless it's time. I said, right. At this point in my life, I could probably arrange my commutes where I'm not doing it at the times that it's bad.
Right. I guess I'm not in a position to rate traffic here. No. It seems to me not to be that bad. But at the same time, you made a good point. I was filling up my tank the other day with cost a lot of money. And then I looked about, they put where your taxes, how much your taxes yes. are, right there on the pump. And I looked at myself and I said the same thing you did. Where's the money going? Why are our roads? I mean, I drive around in a car. I am very fortunate to have, let me put it out there, but will let me feel every single bump, right? And I'm shocked sometimes at the condition some of the roads around here.
Yeah.
And I look at that and go, where's that money going? And the bigger question then is how are we spending our money? And then the next question is Jose, do you see something changing there? And I hear the conversation at that table from our government saying, we can spend our money better,
yeah.
right? And our education in Portland, our budget is one of the largest budgets in the country. I think top 10, right? But our quality of education is in the lowest 10. Okay, what are we doing wrong here, people? Because we've got smart people here in Portland. We've got great people. I know teachers are invested. What is wrong here? What are we doing wrong?
Yeah.
Right? But the general thought and process that I feel by going to these meetings and reaching out and talking to community leaders and Cornell Wesley and is this optimism of not only do we need to change, but we can and we're going to, and we're doing it.
And that gives you hope.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. Where my mindset was 3 years ago compared to now is completely different.
So during the time, so you've been involved with this 3 years now?
About that, yeah.
Yeah. So it's been a net positive. You're feeling more optimistic today and better about everything than you were when you first got started.
Absolutely, because you know one of the things that I was exposed to was I was back in the middle of the criminal law thing. I saw some of the statistics. My friend Nathan was running to be the DA, right, during some of that time period. He was talking to me about some of the statistics, how poorly the DA's office was being run, how we weren't prosecuting crimes. We were not, I mean, the police, Mike Schmidt, the DA at the time, had basically said, and I think he would argue with this, and that's fine, but I think there are some sound bites that we're not going to prosecute X, Y, and Z. We legalized drugs, hard drugs there for a while.
Yeah.
I'm as a prosecutor, I was amazed and stunned, right? Now, everybody out there, it's no longer legal, right? It's now a crime, not as big as one as some of it should be, but that's another discussion for another day. But at that time, we were having to deal with so many problems that were right there in everyone's face. People using drugs right in front of our kids, right next to a school, living fecal matter, the whole nine yards. We don't see that anymore. That's changed. People are addressing these issues. We have work to do. A lot of the issues that I'm just talked about right there are not bad people. There are people that need help, and we're not getting them the help. But we need to have revenue to get them that help. And in order for us to get that revenue, we need to have more people, more businesses come here. And I hear our government saying, we see it, and we're going to do something about that. It's a process that is not a doom loop. It's just something that we need to fix. But at least we are aware of it and we're willing to do something about it.
Good. Yeah. Are you hearing more about businesses, new companies coming? Obviously, we've had some people leave the core down there. And whether it's law firms even or whatever. I mean, you had sort of that exodus out to Cruise Way, for example, of right. a variety of different things. But even the Cruise Way buildings, if you look at those, their occupancy.
They're having their own issues.
Yeah, huh. Exactly. It's not great. So I think, you know, Schnitzer's comments are really shockingly, right? I mean, he knows what he's doing.
He does.
Are accurate.
Yeah.
I mean, to see some turnover, some change of what's going on there, and that's going to take some new energy, new people, but all that redevelopment all leads to tax revenue and just revitalization, which is a wonderful thing. But as far as firms coming in. Obviously, we've got the baseball that talks about coming in, doing things, and you got the government, different levels, trying to figure out, okay, how are we going to fund this stuff, or how are they going to fund it? But as far as other business coming in, are you hearing more about people wanting to get back downtown? And
you know, I'm hearing more success stories about people staying. I'm hearing more success stories about companies doubling down in Portland. As an example, OnPoint, you know, they're a local community credit union.
Yes.
They're just signed a huge lease. I say just, I think this was like last year, some point in time, a big building downtown. Really just doubling down. You know, we've got law firms. Many of our large law firms still are having a foot in Portland downtown. Yeah. They're investing, they're taking advantage of probably a lot of tenant improvements that the building owners are giving them. But nevertheless, they're staying downtown. I'm hearing more about this. It's unfortunate when we hear things like Under Armour. You know, Under Armour had made that investment. Now, the encouraging thing, if I can say this, about them leaving, it did not have apparently anything to do with Portland. It really had to do with shoe sales, right? They had gotten into shoe sales and they just weren't having the business that they thought they would. Yeah. So they had to consolidate their business. But what does that remind me of? I got to say it. Another asset. We are a shoe and apparel design capital. Are we doing anything about that? Why are we not out there saying, if you are a shoe designer, the little guy, come here. Right? We want you here. We want you participating. We want you in this environment. You would be amazed. We have Icon, the motorcycle apparel.
Yeah.
They're here. We've got still Adidas. We still got Nike. You know, we've still got Keen. You know, we are an apparel design community. Don't know it.
Well, think about the knives.
Oh, Kershaw?
Is it Shun, Kershaw? Yeah. Kershaw, Bench. Shun, Gerber.
Benchmade, right?
Benchmade.
My favorite knife,
Leatherman. All that's of right. Those right here. You've got, as far as the hunting, this is the thing that's sort of crazy with that hunting, or that animal thing.
What did we almost recently try to do? You just said it, though. Yeah. We have all those knives, yeah, right? And all that stuff. I think we have Ruger.
We've got Leupold. We've got Sig, right? is in that's Wilsonville.
Right. That's right.
And all their optics.
Right.
Right here. So they might not be making the stuff here. It's all designed, assembled here, all that stuff. But you got Leupold, which is one of the biggest optics company in the whole world. You've got SIG's optics division is all here. You've got all those other firms. And I think, you know, look at whether we're talking craft beer, craft bourbon, craft whatever, all of those. And I think it's all a result of, you know, we were sort of complaining about it. I was complaining about the long, dark days of winter. But you think about all the crafts. That's the thing. It's like people would come here because it was a niche place. It was a freedom of thought and creativity. It was a incubator of ideas.
Right.
And you take it all the way up to Seattle, too.
Right.
And tax-wise, I wish our leaders would understand they're driving that whole, those people that come here to do that stuff, they're just leaving because they don't need to be here.
Well, we're not making it an attractive place to be.
Right. But they want to be here.
Because they figured out the magic sauce, so let's just get them to stay. But here's the frustrating thing. I mean, and I don't know where this is at, and I don't think it's going to work at all. So I don't want to scare anybody because I don't think it's going to work. But we just went through hunting knives and hunting and gun manufacturers. Yeah. Now, wherever you lay on that, that's one thing.
Yeah.
Okay. Positive, negative on guns. I am the unicorn of all liberals.
Yeah.
I am very socially liberal, but I will outshoot most people watching this right now. I love long distance shooting. I have a 6.5 Creedmoor Daniel defense rifle. I love doing it. And I'll tell you right now, we tried to get rid of hunting.
Yeah.
Did you hear about that?
No, I know.
My mind was blown. It was can we stop, please, with the dumb ideas?
Yeah.
Right? So, yeah, to your point, we've got communities of businesses that have chose to make a home here of either the Leupolds and the SIGs and all that, or apparel design and shoe manufacturing. These are the things we need to be celebrating. And I'll go back to my conversations. I am hearing, let's celebrate our wins. Let's celebrate what we have and our assets. That is the conversation constantly. Let's celebrate our assets. Let's build on our assets. And those right there are some of the assets.
We didn't even talk about wine.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Lucid Wild, I don't know if you guys, the new winery in the Valley, they've made a huge investment, and they're doing a lot of things actually in downtown with partners. You know, I've met the owners. They're wonderful. They're from California, but they have invested heavily, not only in the Willamette Valley, right, but they're also investing in Portland. Yeah, and kudos to them. We need that. And why are we not the new Napa Valley?
Yeah.
We should be. We're better. Well,
so I was in Temecula last week. Yeah. Right. You know, I mean, and that whole place is they're blown up. Ensenada.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you know, that area. I mean, so you think about all that stuff, but it's here. I mean, you know, really, we're pretty open to stuff. So I just wanted to make sure, see if what we have covered a lot. And I didn't know, you know, we were talking about, you know, some other things too, which we'll talk about later. We'll go play.
All right.
But so wanted to make sure if there's anything else we want to talk about in here. Well, the vacancy tax, that's not happening.
We people woke up, smelled the coffee. I'm really happy about that. That was another moment of Jose's mind exploding and being so frustrated that anyone would come up with that idea. But luckily, common sense won.
So the one thing I just want to push a little bit more. So this one question here, if someone's watching this owns property in Portland or is thinking about investing here, what's the most important thing they can do? And you talked earlier about if you're available, if they've got questions, but as far as you know, what is your advice to somebody that's contemplating moving in here and who should they be reaching out to, talking to? If it's a business versus like an investor too.
Right. You know, I think from an investor standpoint, they'd be smart to reach out to someone like you, right? Someone who's been in the business a long time, reach out to me. It's not going to be me giving you advice. I'm going to reach out to the people that I know that know better. But there are some people here who are successful. You have to just be picky and choosy about what you're doing. You have to be smart about your decisions, I think, about investing here. But there are opportunities to be had here. But you have to realize you're getting in early. You're taking a bit of a risk, yeah. But again, Portland's not going to change where we are. This is only going to get better, right? We're on top of the problem. And so the reasons why it's so wonderful to live here will always be here. I think the other aspect of this is that if you are a business owner, there was a statistic that I can't tell you exactly what it was, but it's been many, many, many years. I'm going to say close to 15 since an employer came here with more than 50 employees, right? That's got to change, right? So if you're a business out there and you're thinking, God, I'd love to have my headquarters in Portland, Oregon, but it doesn't pencil out, come tell us why and tell us what you need to get here. Because that's what we need. And I think you would be surprised. That person's going to be surprised at the positive reception that they're going to get from not only other business people like ourselves, right, but also from the local government here. I can't really speak much as to the state government as far as the governor. I know she has this new prosperity committee or whatever it's called. I know it's something that's on her radar. But I do know from the city and county standpoint, we're very interested in making sure that if you want to come here, we got to give you opportunities to get here.
So in real estate investing or just buying a house, right? You want to buy the biggest, fanciest house in the most expensive place, or you want to buy the fixer, right? The cheapest one in the nicest place. And with that said, you still look at Portland versus San Francisco or Seattle. It's a soft spot.
Right.
It's still, if you look at the West Coast, we are the soft spot as far as price and everything. So you take that position, it's the opportunity. And that's how I ended up moving here in the first place, is the opportunity was here. And I think probably more so than ever before, that's probably the case. And it's, I sort of feel like, you know, we sort of touched a little bit, but you look at Seattle and what's going on up there right now, they're going through some hard things because of a variety of reasons. Right. I feel like we've been going through some hard things, but you can sort of feel things are starting to go in the right direction. So, and back to my buddy's comment, you know, you just don't want to be in a situation where you're having to sell in a recessionary time, where I think that, you know, we are at a point where, you know, if you're picking stuff up today and you think about these big deals that are happening, they're good prices. You know, it might be a while till they're doing what is the owners are intending to have happen, but to be able to pick that thing up and sit on it for a while and until it gets to what it can be, I think that opportunity is starting to be now.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, you think about some of the big buys that just happened, like Swickard and the Big Pink, right? That when that was, that deal almost closed right at the beginning of COVID. COVID actually put the kibosh on that whole deal. And that was about to sell for, I think, a little over $400 million.
Yeah.
Right? And he just picked that up for $40 million, right? So, yeah, there's some problems with it. But at the end of the day, that's a great property to own for $40 million.
Well, and you think of what the replacement cost is. I mean, so that's when we're back to that affordability factor, you know, right, to take something. So I was, you know, the guy that mentored me, taught me, he's like, okay, development, he says, there's lots of money in development, but there's lots and lots of risk. He was always about taking what's there and making it better.
Right.
You know, taking it, it's like, look, you know, this is what you got, and this is what it's going to cost. You're not having to go all these uncontrolled costs going forward on one of the boats in my marina, the name is change order, right?
Because there you go, appropriate.
We always love those, right?
Yeah. So,
but I think if you're watching, you're paying attention, you got to be starting to feel there's some hope. And absolutely, you were at that event we had a month ago, and it was at that, you know, the new speakeasy there, and it was great to see. I think everybody in the group was so happy to be downtown at an event, and the going around that table, the hope that was expressed was really, it felt good.
Well, kudos to you and your group for getting, having the idea of getting people together that you guys have identified, and I'm honored to be on that list, my wife and I. But to think, we've got to start having conversations like about our community, our business community, and what we all can do and share and bounce ideas off of and eventually do something, right? And you guys doing that is what we need more of. But I kind of see that now at the bigger level. It's these listening environments where people can go and talk and exchange ideas that come from different standpoints. I sat at that table and we had the Parks Bureau, we had the mayor and some of his people, but then we had the City Club, City of Possibility, we had Bull Run. They have different projects, they have different ways of looking at this. The City Club, I think it was, they were talking about a 30-year plan. Bull Run was saying, no, we need to take a look at a 3 to 5 year plan. Yeah. But it's great that those two people are at the same table talking, because we need a little bit of both.
Yeah.
You know, need a little bit of both.
Wow. All right, so if somebody wants to get involved, make a difference, what do they need to do as far as the coalition? Is that something they're still looking for membership?
Absolutely.
What would you recommend for somebody that wants to come in and get involved?
Get involved. Just contact us on our website. We have a contact page there. You can reach out to us. We'd love to have you. We have events on a regular basis. We have happy hours. We get together. You know, our job at Revitalize Portland Coalition is to be the wind beneath the wings of the people that we think are going to be able to change. We're here to educate the public. We're here to educate our elected officials. I testify at city and at the county and at Metro. We have conversations, and we try to bring what power we have to the table to say, hey, look, here's what needs to happen. We don't owe anything to anyone. So RPC is in a unique position where we can speak our mind. And unfortunately or fortunately, they put me in charge. So I tend to do that. And I think that it's one of those opportunities, and I think Portland is there, is where if we're going to change something, we got to be thinking way outside that box, and we better be doing something yesterday. That's my take on it.
That's well said, and thank you so much for being here today. If somebody needs you for a professional work in your profession, so what do you, as far as making a living, Jose. If somebody needs, just real quick before you sign off, you've been generous enough to come in and share your time with us. So I want to make sure that we're
I like that. Yeah. All right. So, you know, I have a unique practice. It's just me. I have a legal assistant. It's a small office. I've been blessed with being able to be successful at being a lawyer. And the reason why is that I think I bring to the table a unique point of view of solving problems. I do everything from personal injury to divorce. Those kind of my two bigger practices there. I have a civil law practice where I'm helping people with a variety of different issues. I'm into cars, so I've been helping a lot of dealers with some of their issues. Yeah. Hopefully they'll exchange me a Ferrari for my work. That hasn't happened yet. But
not a loose.
No.
That's not a Ferrari, though. So.
But I really enjoy my work as a lawyer. I have a unique experience of being a criminal defense, criminal prosecution. I did insurance defense. I've had trials all over the state. I had many, many jury trials. But like I said, I like to find fixes to people's problems. And so thank you for letting me have that plug. If you need to get a hold of me, 100fireslaw.com, 100firslaw.com. That comes from my name, Cienfuegos. Cien is 100, fuego is fire. So thank you to all of you for having me here today. It was very enjoyable. Very enjoyable.
Thank you so much for being here. And I enjoyed getting to know you too.
All right,
so we're going to have to go. We've got a variety of things we need to go play and do. So once again, David Moore, Equity Advantage, one of the Exchange Bros. Thank you so much for being here with us today. 1031exchange.com. And if you've got an idea for a future presentation podcast that you think would be entertaining and informative, please let us know. We're happy to provide that content. Thank you very much. Look forward to talking soon. Bye-bye.